You're listening to Street Talk Live on KSEV.
Welcome to the show and welcome to the weekend. Thanks for tuning us in.
Association of Realtors. In addition, we have RE/MAX Hall of Fame and Houston Business Journal Top 25 Realtor Monica Foster.
Yay!
In studio, taking your calls and comments, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. David Zagari from Envoy Mortgage, sitting in for Lance Roberts. You're listening to Street Talk Live Real Estate Edition, only on AM 700, KSEV, the voice of Texas. It's so funny because over the break we were talking about the business, you know, with Monica Foster, who's here from RE/MAX Space Center in Clear Lake, and about taking phone calls while you're on vacation and taking phone calls. Like, you may have to take a phone call now from a customer, right? I mean, if you do, just let us know. We'll just banter back and forth, Max and I.
Definitely, I'll do it.
So if you have to.
Doctors and realtors are allowed.
I know, it's nuts. Which does get me to a different story, and this is going to get way off topic. But I have sat at a table with, there was a mortgage guy, being me. There was a real estate agent. There was a heart surgeon and a few other people. And we were just hanging out and having, and I'll tell you that the folks whose phone rang the most were the real estate agent and the mortgage guy. Now, why is that? Why is that more important than heart surgery?
That's a good question.
But it is, though. But it could be, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right. Well, Monica, thanks for joining us, and what a pleasure for us to have you here. For those that that don't know, Monica is, you know, she's got more accolades than I can read here, and more acronyms that we're going to go through as the show goes on. But just the RE/MAX accolades are there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them, ranging from you know, being in the top 500, you know, all the way to the Outstanding Achievement Award winner for someone who's been in the business for 8 years. You know, my hat's off
nine
to
years.
You. So 9 years. Okay, yeah. Congratulations. Sorry,
I
missed a year there.
Important.
I didn't want to age you. You know, so. But we were talking before the show, and we go through a list of, you know, that's kind of standard when we have realtors here on the show, and we were talking about the numbers for the Clear Lake, Friendswood, League City, Pearland area that's in your sandbox in your backyard. And we were going through the average days on the market and the average listing price and, you know, listing to sales price ratio. And talk a little bit about the market there and just, you know, what you go through on a day-to-day basis. I mean, are you seeing listings that we've had some other realtor guests down here, and they talk about listings that just sell in 2 or 3 hours and sell for a lot more than what they're asking. Are you seeing that on a regular basis in your market area?
I don't really see that in my area. As far as selling for way more than what they're listed for, I mean, we do get some properties, some listings that do have multiple offers and overbids, but not anything like what obviously they see inside the loop. I mean, we, you know, if we get 5-7,000 over list price, then that's good. So.
Yeah. And how often does that happen where you run into an issue like with an appraisal, or I mean, is that every listing, or is that something that you just run into on occasion?
It's something that I've only run into on occasion. I mean, probably a handful of listings where even though supply was low and demand was really high, the appraiser apparently didn't take that into account, and so, you know, our value didn't quite make it.
Gotcha. So just how much did what's going on at NASA affect the housing market there in Clear Lake and the surrounding areas?
I can't. I mean, as far as quantifying it, I really don't have a way to quantify it. I would say back in 2009, we were strapped with a lot of inventory because of it. You know, people were trying to relocate elsewhere for their job, and so. I think it took us about 9 months to recover from that.
And that hit in 2009?
Correct.
And 9 months, that's all?
From my experience, yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, being here in the Houston area, I would have anticipated that it would have taken a lot longer than 9 months to recover from something like that. Do you know how many people were let go at NASA, or...
I don't have a number. Maybe Chris wants to interject on that one.
Yeah, Chris Dean is also here with us, and Chris and Monica work together, and you've lived there for a long time. I mean, just generally speaking, is NASA a ghost town? Is the parking lot 50? I'm talking about the employee parking lot. Is it 50% full? I mean, what is the? I mean, just give us the swag number if you had to say percentage wise of how many people were let go at NASA.
Well, it's hard to say who was let go because at the time that she's talking about when Constellation ended, the shuttle program was still going, so people were transferring around. But from my personal perspective, I mean, it has had an effect in the parking lot, as you put it, at least on the contractor side, which is where I'm coming from, has been a lot less. There's been a shift more away from contractors to civil servants. But we also switched to a brand new contract too last April. So that was a different scope and a different size. So it's not a, you know, one-to-one comparison there. But we did have a peak in, you know, around that time where we had a lot of work going on and everything, and it has slowly reduced over the last...
I mean, everybody wants to be number one, but, you know, I can't complain with my success and the results that we've had. So I'm happy, but we always, you know, as far as my team and I, we always strive to do better.
That's good. That's good. So what drives the market in... notice how I'm changing the subject on that, in case they're listening. What drives the market right now in your area? I mean, do you have move-up buyers? And from what we're hearing in other areas and from other parts of town is nobody's selling. We have an inventory problem because nobody's selling. Danny Frank, chairman of the Houston Association of Realtors, he was with us last week during this time. And Danny says, you know, people are just not, they're just not selling. That's the problem. And why are people not selling? Well, people are not selling because they don't feel confident, because if you sell, naturally, you have to turn around. You have to live somewhere, and usually people are moving up. So, in your area, what's driving the seller's market?
Well, I think again, you know, I work with a lot of relocation buyers. So for me, that's a big part of my business. And so, you know, we've got the expansion of Ellington Field still going on. Oil, Marathon Oil is moving people into the area, and then you still have people who work on the island, no offense to anybody on the island, but they don't want to live there, so they come to League City, Clear Lake, Friendswood to call home.
That's good, because this tower really doesn't reach Galveston Island, so we can talk about them all we'd like. And that's coming from someone who has a house. You know, I consider myself, there's somebody calling me from Galveston right now, my buddy Blue.
That didn't take long.
Yeah, exactly. So... I'll tell you this, we can talk about them because I'm one of them. I spend about 20% of my time on the island. So do you do any business down there? And what's going on, you know, how are property sales in Galveston? Do you go down that far, or you stop at Texas City or League City?
You know, I think the furthest I'll go is Texas City, and that's kind of few and further between. Galveston Island's got their own thing going on. They've got their own MLS down there, their own association, so I just don't even go down there.
So do you pretty much stop at the outlet mall that's there, the Tangerine Outlet Mall? You don't venture further south than that?
No, I mean I've had a couple of waterfront listings. I've got one now in the Hitchcock area, but you know, other than that, I don't go any further south than that. Most of my clientele want to be in the Clear Creek or Friendswood ISD or Pearland ISD.
Gotcha. So driving that is predominantly oil and gas. I hate to say, I'm hesitant. I'm biting my tongue because many, many years ago, somebody came and told me, and they said, oh, no, Houston's very diverse. You know, we have oil and gas, but then we have compact and we have this other stuff. But in your marketplace, your relocation buyers, who's relocating? I mean, what are the types of companies that are relocating people there?
Well, again, Marathon Oil, and again, a lot of my clientele is military, so I've got a lot of Coast Guard people coming in, as well as just people with the Army. So I've got some guys stationed out at Ellington.
Good. Let's go out to John, who's been patiently holding. Hey, John, how can we help you tonight? But that does bring up a good point, Monica, and that's this: in the city of Houston as a whole, the I'd say $1 to $150,000 price range. So that's everything up to $150,000. that segment of the market is actually up to 80,000. That segment of the market's down 28%. And then the market from 80 to 150 only increased by 7%. When you look at the 250 to 500,000 is up by like 26 or 23.5%. So, and are you seeing in price ranges around 150? Are your buyers, just generally speaking, you don't have to pick on somebody in particular, but generally speaking, are you finding that those buyers are having a harder time qualifying for loans? Or
I haven't experienced that yet. I mean, I haven't had too many buyers that have had a hard time qualifying. So, I mean, obviously they have to go through a lot of rigmarole, but I haven't had an influx of people who just couldn't qualify.
Gotcha. So it's not really, you're not finding it that difficult to actually sell a $150,000 house per se?
Not at this point, no.
Gotcha. How many offers do you generally get on a house priced in that range? Just give or take.
You're talking about on any particular house?
Yeah, just any random, $120,000 listing.
Probably, I mean, just two or three, I mean, in a few days. I mean, if that's
gotcha.
Your question, I'm not sure okay. if I'm still following it. So.
Yeah, and I think what I'm trying to get to is just to get a ground-level example. Danny Frank was here last mm-hmm. week, and I tried to call him out on, these lower price homes are just, they're not participating in the, they're not setting record milestones like the upper price. Anything 250 and above is really robust. And number of units, average sales prices in those ranges are just, they're outpacing the lower sales prices. And so what a layman would want to think is this, and believe me, I'm no economist, but I would sit there and go, well, the rich are getting richer and the poor are not. And they're not participating in the credit markets in this case. And he had some good comeback, and I can't remember what it was, but he just, he said, well, there's a lot of investors buying those up. Who's buying a $150,000 house? What's the, are they investors or are they buying it to live in?
I mean, you have a lot of investors, but a lot of them are buying it to live in. I mean, with the understanding, though, that in my area, we don't have a huge amount of homes that are in that price range. I'm not saying we don't have some. Obviously, we do, but... I mean, I think the bulk of the homes are going to be 200,000 and up.
And what is your average listing price for the houses that you have listed for sale?
Probably about 225.
Okay. And do you have anything that's like a screaming deal that you want to tell? I mean, could you give one of those houses away right now?
No, I don't
okay.
think so.
You just don't want to? Okay. 281-558-5738 if you'd like to buy one of Monica's listings. I'm working for them. I'm trying to get a good deal here. She's just not budging because you don't have to, right?
No.
You just don't. And is that what you're telling your sellers? Are you telling them, when they get an offer on the first day that's 10% less than the asking price, what's your advice to them?
Wait a couple of more days.
Just hang out.
Yeah. I mean, if the house is priced well, it looks good, great location, they don't have to jump on the first thing that comes in, especially if it's in the first day or two.
And the agent that's representing the buyer, do they ever apologize to you when they're sending an offer over that's well below the asking
All
price?
The time.
And do they say, hey, look, this is just what my client wants me to do. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, you still see some of that. But I think, for the most part, most of us know to tell our clients, if you like the house, make a fair offer. I mean, we still have a shortage of inventory. So, don't play games because somebody else will come in and make a fair offer and beat you to it.
Gotcha. And we went through these numbers prior to the show. The listing price to sales price average for your area is somewhere in the 97% range.
Right.
So if you're out there looking... In the Clear Lake, Friendswood, League City area, then you should expect statistically to offer maybe 3% less than the asking price, and that's what you're going to get. Does that sound feel about right?
That's about right, but some people still want to push it a little bit more, and so 5% I think would be the max that somebody would probably want to come in under list.
Our special guest, RE/MAX Hall of Fame Realtor Monica Foster. We're talking anything real estate, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. In addition, we have Chris Dean, who's here in studio. And Chris, you and I were talking off the air, and you had mentioned something I'd like for you to tell everyone. And by the way, some of the conversations that we have, Max, off the air are really, they're solid. Because we get nervous when we get on the, like I'm nervous right now. I am. I've been doing this for a while.
That's why I leave the microphones up and
exactly.
Record everything.
You should record everything. Because what you were saying, Chris, was this, is that, you know, some, explain to me the dynamic of this. Of this first-time home buyer generation and why we're stalling. And also, maybe that explains why we have all these new apartment complexes going up everywhere. What's explain to us what's happening.
Well, I had read that one of the reasons, because housing is at an all-time, affordability anyway, is at an all-time high, yet it's not really, mortgages and home ownership is not at an all-time high. And one of the reasons proposed, and I think it's a pretty valid one, is we have generation these days of children that are not leaving their parents' homes. Mm-hmm. They're staying in there longer. They're staying till age 29, 30. So they're not getting out at age 21, 20 and starting a family and purchasing a home. And so that's why, especially if a lot of those people were buying homes that were in the $100,000 range, which I imagine a good percentage would be, mm-hmm. Maybe that's also a reason why that homes in that range aren't selling as much as some of the ones in $500,000, because I don't know anybody who probably leave their parents' homes and go into a $500,000 home.
Chris, you're not making my night talking about kids staying home past.
You can relate, right. Is that right?
We kind of want them. I can't say anything because my daughter's 12 and a half, but if she's with us when she's 30, her mom would like that, but I wouldn't. I love her to death, but it's time for her to move on. But I hear what you're saying. You know, we have offices throughout the country, and in Arizona and in California, I hear this, that the children have seen the parents struggle. This new generation is growing up. This next generation of homebuyer has watched the parents struggle through a house payment and says, and they're just tapping out and saying, you know what, I'll go rent. I don't need to go through that. So I do, you know, whether or not that's happening here, you know, whether or not, you know, children are just feeling like they want to stay at home. Maybe their parents have a cool house. You know, if my parents had a cool house, I probably would not have moved out. But that's just me.
Maybe it's fear.
It could be, yeah, or yeah, fear of the unknown, you know, uncertainty with their jobs or their future. So, but thanks a lot for adding that. 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSEV. You know, I wanted to talk to, you know, Monica or Chris, both either one or both could address this, because last week we talked about this, and it's a pretty big issue. I have a home that has flood insurance, and it's insanely expensive already. And, you know, do you worry about this new flood insurance premium mess that's going on, and what is that going to do to houses that are located in the floodplain that are down there in Clear Lake or south of Clear Lake?
Definitely going to slow sales. I mean, I've talked to homeowners who are wanting to sell because they know their rates are going to go up and go up quickly over the next several years. So we, you know, I also just had a deal that closed where it almost didn't close because when the elevation certificate was done, his insurance was going to be $4,000, you know, so he couldn't afford it. Luckily, the sellers found the existing elevation certificate, and we were able to use it. So,
and it was going from what were their, what did they anticipate? And then you said that it came in at $4,000. What were they thinking they were going to pay for that insurance on that house? Approximately, hundred bucks a year. Or?
Well, no, a little bit more than that. I mean, because of the location, I think he was probably thinking more like $1,500.
Mm-hmm. And so it came in at $4,000.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you that. Have you heard any of the horror stories? And, of course, this comes out of Galveston, and there's a picture of somebody that is in front of their house, and the house is worth like $30,000, and their flood insurance is going to be, like their premium is going to be $40,000 a year. Have you heard anything crazy and outlandish like that in your area?
No, not that. Not to
not
that
extent. Crazy. Because you're not doing enough. You're not doing enough on the island. Yet,
no,
so.
No.
No, that is really cool. Now, prior to the show, we were talking about inventory, and Chris, you had mentioned that inventory in 1999 during the summer. Well, I'm sorry, that inventory this past summer was as low as it had been since 1999.
That's correct.
So what happens in that? I mean, doesn't that just naturally push prices up? I mean, don't you have multiple offers and the euphoria that's happening in the rest of the city? Doesn't that happen well, in an environment like that?
You definitely have the multiple offers. I remember on many of them that it was just multiple offers every single time. And I distinctly remember her getting buyers in, and they would go look at a home, and it would come to the market right away, and then immediately there'd be multiple offers. I mean, it was almost crazy where you kind of had to, you better get out there right away and put an offer on right away. And it was also frustrating, I guess is the word at times, because you wouldn't always know that they were already under contract or things like that because they went so quick and they didn't get changed right away in the MLS. So your buyers would go in, they want to make an offer, and then she would call, and then it would be, yeah, they have multiple offers already. And it happened time and time again.
Absolutely.
And some of them, I felt bad for some of her buyers because some of them were really having a hard time finding what they were looking for. And when they did, it was always, oh, okay, that just got sold, or that just went under contract, or has three offers. And so it's really tough. In the middle of the summer, it was really, really bad for that.
Yeah. So do you have – how many buyers do you have right now, Monica? I'm going to put you on the spot. About how many do you have right now that can't find what they're – I mean, where there's just no – where they say, I've got to be in this neighborhood, and I really want to pay this price, which is average, and you just can't find them anything that fits their criteria?
Probably only a handful.
Okay.
Because most of them are realistic. They know we're coming off a very low inventory. So, and they have to be in something. So, unfortunately, they have to settle somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, only a handful that are just going to get what they want, and they will take however long it takes.
What is unique about our conversation are the last three guests that we've had in here. From different parts, you know, not Clear Lake, have all three in unison said, you know, I've got people that I'm working with that I can't find anything, and that's the most challenging part of my job is finding something that suits someone that needs it like now. I mean,
right.
And that's what causes, you know, especially like, you know, we'll pick on the Woodlands or the Heights where somebody has to have a place to live. So you're, I think the story, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, in your particular marketplace, which this is a good thing, that it's affordable, you haven't seen the crazy, you know, upswing in price. So therefore, when I ask you this question, I think I know what the answer is. It's the lead question, but do you worry about any potential bubble in your, you know, Clear Lake, Friendswood, League City, Pearland?
I don't, again, because we haven't seen these prices just go through the roof. We haven't, like I said earlier, we haven't experienced anybody offering $40,000 over list. I mean, we don't have that kind of market down there. I'm not worried about it. I don't anticipate it.
I want to talk to you about something different, and forgive me, I didn't ask you this before the show. So this is coming out of nowhere.
Well, here it comes.
Here it comes. We talked about the outlet mall. Do you shop at the outlet mall there, the Tanger Mall?
No.
Okay.
We've been there once.
What did you, and Chris, what did you think? Did you not like it?
I didn't really have
I
one.
Love that place.
Yeah, I didn't really have one opinion one way or another. I will say I'm glad we don't have to go to the 290 one, though.
Right.
We've had to go there for a few of the outlet stores. So.
Everything is on sale, but it's not. It's like, here's 30% off, and then they hand you something, you walk in, it's another 20% off, and then I do the math, which is, you know, it's 20 and 30 means 50. That's not how they do it. You know that, right? They take 30 off, then they take 20 off. If you add it all up, it's, you know.
I'm a finance guy,
so I'm supposed to know what that is supposed to mean, but it's not 50%, right?
No.
It's not half price.
I'll be honest with you, though. We tend to just shop online because we're so busy, you know, getting going. And then you got to fight the crowds and stuff. So we kind of avoid going to the stores if we can.
I know, but I go there for the pretzels.
I get the pretzels. Can't get those from Amazon.
I know, so. You can't buy those online. So you have you're an accredited buyer's rep. You're a certified new home specialist, residential construction certified, short sale and foreclosure certified, in addition to being a long-standing member of the Houston Association of Realtors. So to get all these designations, I mean, how much schooling did you have to go through? How long did it take for you to complete all of that?
With exception of one of the designate, well, let me take that back. With exception of two of the designations, the rest are just anywhere from 2 to 3 days of coursework. So just 2 to 3 days and you get the designation. But the Certified Residential Specialist designation, you actually have to show transactions or production in order to get that. So that was something that I didn't obtain until probably about my sixth year in real estate, just because the amount of transactions they wanted at the time, it took a while.
So. Yeah, they say only about 7% of area realtors have it, because it's very difficult to get.
And so in addition to those certifications, you've also been in the Chairman's Club, the 100% Club, the Executive Club from inside RE/MAX.
Correct.
And so some people would look at, did you say 8 years in the business?
Nine
years. This is the second time. That's just not right. If you ask me how long I've been married, I wouldn't know that. So right now I'm having a temporary lapse.
Yes,
my wife's listening, so be careful. I know how long I've been married, but just don't ask me right now. But that's not, to some people, that's not a long time, right? Mm-hmm. So how did you, but it is a long, I'm not saying it's not, somewhere it's kind of in between, but, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder. But I could say that's not a real long time. I mean, how did you... You came right out of the chute and just went straight to the top. So what made you had an accounting background prior to real estate. What really drove you? And prior to the show, I told you my little two-bit story about real estate finance. But what got you into the business and what keeps you here? And what motivates you to go straight to the top like you've done?
Well, real estate is something that I wanted to do back when I was in high school. So when I was a senior, I knew I wanted to do one of two things. That was either real estate or accounting. For whatever reason, I chose accounting. After 7 years in the industry, I got laid off, and I could not find work because at that time, that was when the WorldCom and Enron scandals were going on. Mm-hmm. So from that point forward, most companies wanted someone who was a CPA, which I was not. So Chris and I got the bright idea that we wanted to start investing in real estate, and hey, I'll go get my license. I need a job anyway, but just for the purpose of investing.
Of investing.
That didn't pan out. We just bought our first investment property last year.
Nice.
So, it just kind of, it fed on itself. I think once you start getting a taste of the success and helping people, it feeds on itself, and you want to aspire to do more and help more people. So
yeah, it's kind of it's addictive, isn't it?
It is. It is.
So when you first set out, you got your real estate license for reasons of you wanted to buy your own. You wanted to be principal to the transaction.
Right.
But instead, you started to represent. You started to find yourself representing people. That's an interesting story.
Right.
And then how and what motivates you to work as hard as you've done to get all this stuff? Because this is. You know, and I've seen a lot of real estate agents. I've never seen anybody with a rap sheet this long. I mean, I was intimidated coming to the show. I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, what am I going to call Monica? Am I going to call her RE/MAX Hall of Fame Realtor? You know, because there's always some kind of, you know, that's just good radio.
Sure.
You have to call you something.
Right.
And it has to be that fast.
That's right.
And I was going, goodness gracious, I've got too much stuff here to pick from. And then in addition, you know, you've got the Houston Business Journal top 25.
Yes.
So you have had like formal sales training or has RE/MAX helped you out? And the reason why I'm saying this, there are people out there listening that may want to choose real estate as a career. You know, so what would you tell them? I mean, how do you go from nothing to where you are today?
Honestly, you know, aside from the educational courses, the certified negotiation expert designations like that, that's the formal training. You don't, you know, I don't have sales training. You learn by doing, and so that's where it's come from. I mean, my business was able to take off the way it was because I have someone, I like to call him the wizard behind the curtain, which is Chris. Mm-hmm. So he's the one who's handling all the back end stuff. I'm out there in front of the people selling the real estate. He's the one handling all of our marketing and our presence. So
well, but it's important to note, though, I only get him to you. You know, once I hand him off, that's on for her to do. And if it wasn't for her work ethic and her knowledge and her customer satisfaction, it wouldn't really matter how much marketing I did, you know, because her referral network does a lot as well. And a key thing is reviews, too. I mean, she has very good reviews. I mean, it's like 4.5 stars,
yeah,
out of 5 out of 236 reviews now,
yeah,
which is, in our area, in our zip codes we serve, it's one of the highest combinations of, you know, high score versus number of reviews. And that's what people want to know. I mean, when you go on Amazon, you look at reviews, right? Before you, so these do
sure.
the same thing here. So that's a testament to her. You know, she has those reviews. So I think it's really a combination of everything. But certainly for new realtors starting out, you've got to jumpstart and prime that pump. And the only way to do it is to market. Once you get that going and people start knowing who you are and hearing your name and your referral network kicks in, then that kind of takes over. And eventually you have probably both. But that's really what did it, coming to an area like she did. You know, not knowing anybody. So yeah, I don't know if we've ever stepped back and said we want to be number one, but we certainly want to do well. I mean, I never look at anybody else and say I want what they have. I mean, we
sure.
just kind of do our own thing, and that's what happens. And there's enough business for everybody to go around right now, so it's not a big deal.
Right, right. Hey, and that's again, that's Christine and Monica Foster. Thank you guys so much for coming down. You can visit Monica online at realtybymonica.com. And I hope that we'll have a link to her website through the Street Talk Live newsletter. But thank you so much for coming down. It's been a great time. And I know your stomachs
you.
Are growling.
That's right.
So it's food time.
And download the mobile app.
And thank you, yes. Again, realtybymonica.com.